This podcast is produced by the Center for Deployment Psychology at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. In addition, references to any specific companies, products, processes, or services does not necessarily constitute or imply endorsement by the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. Welcome to CDP's podcast, Practical for Your Practice,
where we give you actionable intel to support what you do, one colleague to another.
Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of Practical for Your Practice podcast. I'm Dr. Kevin Holloway and I'm joined today by my co-host colleague, Corinne Lefkowitz. Hi, Corinne.
Hello, Kevin. Hello,
Dr.
everybody.
Dr. Corinne Lefkowitz. Let me correct that.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you.
Very important.
Very important. Happy to be here.
So happy to be here.
Yeah.
I'm really excited today. We have a great guest for everybody. I'm so excited to introduce her, but we're gonna have a listener question first.
Woo!
Another listener question. Isn't that exciting?
Yes.
All right. So let me read it to you, Corinne. This is from Vaughn from Kansas City.
I mean, Vaughn. I have to say, yep. Hi, Vaughn.
Hi, Vaughn. He says, I just found your podcast and I love it. Aw, thanks. And says, but I'm just getting started listening to it. Do you have a favorite episode so far that I should be sure not to miss? Oh man, Vaughn, you're going to make us play favorites.
You know what? I had two come to mind. Don't tell Jenna. They're both with you on it.
Oh,
that says
I'm telling
nothing
Jenna
about
that.
Jenna. That says nothing about Jenna. You'll understand why. You'll understand why. Yeah, well, now I'm just going to go first.
Okay, go first.
So, yeah, I have two favorite ones. One was the one that we did with Lydia on trauma-informed care. I think it was.
So this is why you shouldn't go first, is because I was going to say that
yours?
Too. So you stole my.
Okay, well,
no,
well,
seriously, say more.
Oh no, I'll say that's one of my favorites. My
awesome.
Other favorite was way back when, in maybe season two or so, before I was a host and I was just a guest with you and Andy, and we were talking about the just world belief.
Yes.
That was one of my favorite episodes because I just remember laughing the whole time. Like, and there was no pressure on me because I was just the guest. And it was just fun talking about the just world belief in trauma treatment and trauma conceptualization. And somehow we laughed and had a good time. So
I love it.
You go ahead.
I would absolutely agree. So the trauma-informed care with Lydia Barflow, that was season 4, episode 7, if you need to go find it. It was a fantastic one. I really liked that. I will say my other favorite, and this is, Corinne, don't be too embarrassed. My other favorite is the confessional episode where, so, you know, this was in season 4. I think all my favorites are coming from season 4, where we had some confessions about when things didn't go quite right. And my absolute favorite was when Corinne was talking about her client who vomited. That was like,
He didn't vomit, although, but I think you love that because you just love to make the sound effects for it
that
every
and,
time.
And it's so relatable because I've also had clients who have vomited. And I think it's a question that comes up every time I teach PE. What if my client starts vomiting? So very relatable. But there's so many good ones. It was hard to pick just a couple. So
well, I had two that popped in my head immediately. So that was a great question. That
it really
was. Thinking about what we've done so far and what we loved. And I have to say, I think I'm going to love today's episode too. But,
oh man. Well, that goes without saying. That'll be on the list of favorites too. Thanks, Vaughn, though, for the question. Yeah. I hope we give you enough information. You can go find those episodes, but it's hard to pick. So, you know, just anyone you listen to, I think, is one of my favorites. That's
what's your new favorite, listeners? What's right. your favorite episode? Okay, no, we're
that's
not going to do
question.
That.
Send us that. All right. Well, like Corinne said, this is very likely going to be a new favorite. I'm really excited. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit fangirling here. Is that is that an appropriate term?
Yeah.
Because our guest today is really amazing. She is brilliant, but also a lot of fun, and so involved in trauma research and how do we make interventions, treatments accessible to people. So. We have with us today, Dr. Sheila Rausch. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, we're excited. And we won't ask you whether you've had any patients vomit during PE because we've already covered that question.
I have. That's not a bad thing. That's a good sign of engagement for some people.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit who you are, Sheila. So for the people who don't recognize your name for whatever reason,
Yeah,
tell us who you
so
are.
I'm Sheila Rausch. I work at the Emory Healthcare Veterans Program, and I also do work at VA. I've been working in PTSD and trauma treatment and clinical care for over 25 years. And I love everything about it. It's really just such a great area to work and see the impact that you can have on people's lives day to day. So my kind of drive throughout my career is how can we make treatments work better for more people more quickly and get them out to them where they are. So
Yeah.
really trying to boost everything that we do in PTSD treatment. So we've got great treatments options that work really well for a lot of people, but not for everybody. And the biggest issue we have is really that access issue, getting it out to people with PTSD in the moment that they're willing to start treatment and they have something there that they can grab.
So true. I'm a PE instructor and therapist. Corinne is one of our CPT instructors, but also does a lot of PE in her practice too. And so, for those of you who are not familiar, Sheila is one of the authors on the second edition of the Therapist Guide for Prolonged Exposure Therapy. So, and has been doing a
Yay.
lot of, the work in PTSD and particularly prolonged exposure for years. So, she knows what she's talking about, which is fantastic. But also too, like you mentioned, I've been impressed with so many efforts that you've been involved in about increasing that accessibility. And one that strikes me is certainly through the pandemic. And I know in previous episodes I keep referring to the pandemic as if it's over, and we still have ongoing outcomes or issues that are related to the pandemic. One in particular is that so much trauma happened during the pandemic, and that among healthcare providers, among people just trying to do their work, people with family members who were ill or even themselves became ill, so much trauma that was happening, so much demand for care, and so much need for these great tools, these great interventions. And at the same time, all of a sudden, just because of the needs for disease control or infection control, social distancing and isolation and not being able to go in and to see a therapist, and severe restriction on capacity. Just it we're still dealing with a severe restriction on capacity. And so, of course, thinking about how do we help get these tools to the people who need them is so dang important and still continues to be important. And one of those, I know it's a long preamble, but one of those efforts that I'm so impressed with, I just came across the Making Meaning of Difficult Experiences, the self-guided program
Yes.
workbook. I'm so excited. I wanted to ask you about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
I would love to tell you about that. So that book really came out of the pandemic. All of my career, as I mentioned, I've been trying to get versions of PE that are easier to use, that are more accessible. So moving them into primary care, having, less and less therapist contact. So when the pandemic happened, Barbara Rothbaum and I were trying to think of ways to get the skills that are part of PE that we know help people when we deal with trauma in our lives, that emotional processing skill, and getting it into a form that was digestible for just normal people without any therapist contact, without any therapist support. And that's really where that Making Meaning of Difficult Experiences book came. That's our version of how to process emotions. It includes some good, support and positive coping and other things as well. But the core of that book is really approaching emotions with any kind of difficult experience. And what's one thing that's different about that book than most of what I've done in my career is that it's not PTSD centric.
Right.
It's for general public, for any kind of difficult experience, if it's your divorce, if it's your other thing that we wouldn't, us PTSD researchers put that criteria in A. We have good reasons for it, but this book is actually intended for general audiences, lots of difficult experiences. It's not just PTSD.
That's really exciting, and I don't think that I realized that before you mentioned it. So we've been talking a lot about transdiagnostic types of approaches on our podcast and just in our trainings. And certainly we're always talking about that notion of what do you do if criterion A isn't met? You know, can you still use some of these techniques? So I'm curious if you could tell us just a little bit more about how you ended up there, how you ended up with this manual that is not just PTSD specific.
So how we ended up there was really just thinking about what the average person is experiencing in their lives, and how do we teach a skill that's applicable to anyone? Like this isn't a I don't think of this as a therapy manual at all. This is really a skill. And after we wrote it, I was thinking, oh, we should have written a version of this for kids, because this is something that is a skill everyone needs to have, and maybe we should be teaching it to our kids. This version has like some experiences that are actual Criterion A traumas described in it. So while I might talk to my kids about it, there are some people who wouldn't be comfortable talking with their kids about a sexual assault or that sexual assault happened. So anyway, the gist of this is that I see these as skills for everybody. And we really got to this just because I think it's the natural progression of my career. Like, how do we make this work for more people? How do we make this work for more people? What parts of this are relevant to other people's experiences? And then that's really where this book came. And we've actually been working on an app that's just the emotion processing piece from the book that is also out there. We're still tweaking it, we're still working on it, but it actually is in Google Play and Apple Store as it is
This is
now
the Messy
in
Memories
our
app.
beta, yeah, in the beta form, the Messy Memories app.
I love that because I know I'm talking to two PE mavens here.
I don't know if I'd call myself that, but
I'm calling you that.
okay, cool.
But I'm thinking about it from the CPT perspective as well. And so often when I'm teaching CPT, I'm thinking about the fact that those skills are basic skills for emotional health or cognitive health that we are streamlining, that we are aiming towards trauma recovery, but they're really universal, helpful skills. And so the way that you describe the focus of the book and its goals really fits in with my understanding of things as well.
Yeah, I really like to talk about how emotions aren't dangerous. And I do this in PE all the time. Emotions aren't dangerous. It's only if you feel like you have to do something to get rid of that emotion or to respond to that emotion that can be dangerous. But we really need to be teaching our kids and teaching ourselves that we can feel strong affect, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing. That's telling us, you know, something's going on in the world that we can pay attention to, or something's going on in our own psyche that maybe we want to pay attention to. But emotions are signals. It's not bad or good. They're just kind of there to direct us.
There are and they're valid and
Yeah.
absolutely. One of the things I really love too. I was reading through at least the first several chapters recently. I'm going to continue to read it, but what I love about it is that it's not geared to therapists, right? So those of you that are listening that are therapists, who are like, I need to get this book. You do, but more about so you can be familiar what's in it and recommend it in situations where it can be appropriate. Because this, like Sheila said, this is not a therapist guide. This isn't something to teach us how to do this better. This is about giving those tools directly to the person who needs them and letting them work through that in a self-paced thing. And not everybody maybe is a good fit with working through this on their own, right? Certainly there are some folks that really do need an intervention with a therapist. Maybe they need a full protocol of prolonged exposure therapy or cognitive processing therapy or something else. Or maybe they need a little bit of support from a provider as they're working through these things. But this is really aimed at a person working through this largely on their own. Fantastic during the pandemic when some folks just absolutely couldn't get in to see somebody, or for various reasons, right? The physical barriers or financial or other. But this is directly written for that consumer, if you will, that accessible to their understanding. And I loved really that approach, the language that was selected there.
Thank you. Thank you. That was intentional. And another thing that's really important to me, and that this book was a piece of this kind of my work to try and make this more realistic, is the more doors that we have for people with PTSD to enter and get effective treatment, the better, the more people are going to actually do that. So being able, it doesn't mean that the first door that you try is going to be the right door for you. So you might try this book and find that you need a little bit more help. So it's really important with each of these doors that we, you know, have a really good, what's the strongest, most effective skill or book or treatment that we can have through this door, but also what would be a next step for someone who maybe this isn't enough for them. So that's true with this book. We talk about what, if you need additional help, here's some ways to get it. It's also true with the prolonged exposure for primary care, the primary care version of PE that's much briefer. When I'm training providers in that treatment, a really important message that I give them is that it's not a bad outcome if your patient needs a higher level of care. Like if you're working with them and you say, oh, right, these brief sessions just don't give you enough support for you to be able to do the things that you need to do to get what you need to out of this treatment, so I'm going to refer you to specialty mental health. You know, it's giving them that success experience and starting to approach, and then letting them have that next step of or higher level of care that may be a better fit for them in that moment, but letting the patient direct that and direct that choice so that they're feeling empowered. That means so much with trauma survivors. That's a big piece of what I work on with all my patients. Once they feel like they can handle it and they're golden, they're not going to have PTSD anymore.
Well, that PE and primary care is exactly what I wanted to ask you about next, especially as you talk about having different doors, different ways to access treatment. To me, that has seemed like such a huge option to access treatment, such a great innovation to make good treatment available to more people. So could you tell us more about the PE in primary care model and how it's been working?
Yeah, so the PE for primary care model is working really well. We've got it working across over 200 VA facilities, sites, and a bunch of DOD sites, as well as a bunch of federally qualified health centers in civilian settings. So it's really getting out there. And what I love about that model is it's embedded behavioral health providers, which are typically social workers, psychologists, even LPCs or others. They're able to, in the moment that the patient raises their hand for some help in primary care, or if they screen positive in primary care, the first moment that they're noticing that or acknowledging that, they're getting connected with an effective treatment right in that moment. So it can even be in that same week that that behavioral health provider starts prolonged exposure for primary care. Before I move any farther, I do want to talk a little bit about one thing that I've been thinking about and talking about more recently is shifting the name that we use for prolonged exposure. So I'll kind of put a pin in that maybe and come back to it so I can finish talking about PEPC. I will come back to that. So PEPC itself is a lot, it's got the same elements as the full PE. All of the same elements. They do memory processing, they do in vivo, they do psychoeducation, but it's in a much smaller dose. And they're doing a lot more of it on their own between sessions. So like the memory exposure is in a written format that they're coming in and they're reviewing with the therapist. When Jeff Seegrang, who is a military psychologist, and I, when we developed this intervention, we really wanted to keep the session time to those skills that really require the therapist expertise more than others. And with the written exposure, they're able to write out their memory to do that piece of feeling the emotion, but then reworking the meaning, the processing is really what we're doing in the 4 to 8 30-minute sessions with the patient. And we're looking for the places where they may be avoiding. So they read through their written narrative once, and then the rest of the session is processing. So we're really, it's demonstrated about a 40% remission rate with those 4 to 8 30-minute sessions.
Wow.
That's really
fantastic. In the primary care setting. And we've got just a little bit of in vivo in there as well.
Before we go to the name change, because this is important, I really do want to hear more about this. There's even another, you know, type of or version, if you will, of PE that I'm aware of. You mentioned it in the Making Meaning of Difficult Experiences, but I've also heard some presentations by yourself or Barbara Rothbaum about this too, like kind of a 1 to 3 session intervention in emergency rooms for folks. I wonder if you could describe that a little bit too.
So it's actually quite well, I guess it's kind of in between full PE and PE for primary care. So it's basically focused on that emotional processing. So they're doing a good chunk of the imaginal exposure. So they're talking through their memory in the same way that we would in a regular PE session, a full PE session. Whatever target trauma brought them into the ER, they're going through it with the therapist right in the ER, and then typically about two additional follow-on sessions. And that also has been demonstrated to reduce rates of PTSD 6 months later.
That's
So this is part of what led to this Making Meaning book, is that we're seeing, the key element that is involved in change is this emotional processing. It's a therapeutic way of approaching a memory and reminders, and being able to take your life back from that.
so important.
That's so exciting. And we are going to get to the title change, but I feel inclined to say it's so exciting, because I'm thinking about my time in the VA, now going back more than 10 years, and I worked in primary care. I was embedded, but I was the only one, the only person there doing PE, which was, I loved doing PE. It was so powerful, but I can only see so many people at a time, and I had like a 3 to 5 month waiting list to get
Oh,
somebody
wow.
into PE. This notion of people being able to get started right away, to not have
Yes.
to wait for an intake, to not have to wait to get filtered down to me, is so exciting. I'm just so grateful, so thankful that patients have access to this now.
Or to even wait until there's room on the therapist's schedule to
Yeah.
see a person 90 minutes twice a week. Like
Exactly.
that's tough
Yeah.
scheduling too.
It's super important with PTSD to get people in as quickly as we possibly can. When I was running a PTSD clinic in the VA, my whole team knew if it was more than 2 weeks that you were scheduling someone, I was going to come and change. That's not going to happen. Like you got to see them. If you've done the intake, you got to see them within 2 weeks. We got to get them in. Because otherwise that avoidance takes over. It's always there in the background. It's an avoidance-based disorder. So we don't want to give that the chance to blow up or increase.
Yeah, for sure.
And if they're asking for help, we want to jump on that opportunity.
Get them to the things that work as quickly as we can. Get them to, for me, it's get them to approach the emotion connected to that memory. So that's what I do.
Well, so speaking of that, and we've been alluding to this all along, I think another really important way of improving access to care and to help get people into that therapy is to consider other barriers too. And I know I've joked about this when I teach PE that PE maybe sometimes suffers from an unfortunate naming convention because of marketing purposes, right? Especially when we have other kinds of approaches, like let's say accelerated resolution therapy. And nothing wrong with that. I think it's a fantastic approach too. But we make the joke of like, who wants to do prolonged exposure when you have the option of doing accelerated resolution? And there's not really a lot of difference, both in the techniques and the time it takes to get better, but there's kind of that perception. So you've mentioned this name change a little bit. Tell us about that and kind of the purposes behind it. What are we doing?
So the name change really came out of many years of discussion, and I agree with you, Kevin. Prolonged exposure has a marketing problem. So really, what I've been thinking is we've got a marketing problem. We've also got more research than any other therapy that's out there for how well it works and for how it works in so many different. We've got almost 30 years of research supporting that it works well with even really complex patients. So I want to do better marketing. I also don't want to lose connection with our really strong research foundation. So I've been talking with lots of people about how can we change what we call, or how can we have a name that maybe is like a marketing drug name and then the regular drug name. So for prolonged exposure, what I've been wanting to, and what I've been using with patients now, is processing emotions. So when I was saying PE for primary care, what I call it now is processing emotions in primary care. So we've still got that same acronym, the PEPC. We would still have the full PE acronym. So everyone would still know it's the same, hopefully. But when we're talking with patients, calling it processing emotions therapy instead of prolonged exposure. And the reason for that is we know that that it's an obstacle for patients. It sounds really unpleasant. And it also doesn't really reflect what we're doing very well. So when I'm working with patients in PE, they're in the driver's seat. I'm not exposing them to things. They're in the driver's seat. We're working together. We're collaboratively planning how to approach their trauma memory and reminder so that they can do the things that they want to do in their life. Mm-hmm. Calling it processing emotions, I think, does a better job of describing what we'll be doing. And it's just more approachable.
I think that's so important, that that sense of approach. The language itself is communicating that this is an approach. This is a, in many ways, a strengths-based kind of, you know, intervention here that we're going to be approaching rather than avoiding. We're going to be doing the work of processing, but not kind of this prolonged exposure. I agree. It has sounded to me for years almost like we're doing something, we're inflicting something onto somebody that's, and it's going to last a long time. Where really a lot, even providers that I train are shocked when we tell them this is a short-term therapy, truly. You know, we're not talking about years of therapy on it. We're talking about 8 to 15 sessions. And it's fast, really. And the prolonged word kind of makes it feel like it's something that it's not.
I mean, if I'm doing 90-minute sessions, it's not uncommon that we're done at session 6 with patients that I see. If you're doing your homework between, and even with our sessions, if they're doing their homework between, it's anywhere from 6 sessions all the way to, I can't remember the last time I had a 15-session person. But anyway, that's what it says in the manual.
Yeah, love that.
That's a good segue to maybe have the opportunity to hear about, I guess, a success story, if you would, that you've had. And we've covered so much ground today between the manual and PEPC and standard PE and all of the things. But for listeners who maybe aren't totally familiar with PE or haven't had the opportunity to see it work, do you have an experience that has stood out to you that has been really rewarding or that has been really noteworthy that you could share with folks?
It's really hard when you've been working with patients and in training programs as long as I have been doing this, because I love all of my patients. And I'm always like, the most amazing experience is being able to have someone take their life back and like be an entirely different person at the end of treatment than they were at the beginning. So I'm thinking through all the amazing patients. So I really can't say a favorite, but one.
Which, by the way, is a great problem to have. Right? Yeah,
no, it is. And I feel very blessed every time that someone works with me and tells me their stories. Like, it's so amazing. I tell people when I'm training that we hear the worst of humanity, but we also hear the best of humanity when we're hearing these stories. It's amazing the bravery and the ways that people survive and help others. So probably this was one of the first patients I'm not going to get it. I don't want to give anything that would identify them. But anyway, he was a father, a military veteran who had had to shoot a child in a convoy. And from the time that he did that, he started developing PTSD. He had 2 children back home. So when he came back from his deployment, he had PTSD. He ended up getting a divorce because he couldn't be around his kids. They were a big reminder for him. He would see the child that he shot. And I'm going to fast forward to, we're working in PE and he's got a lot of blame. He called himself a monster a lot. We were having some really good sessions with lots of emotion, but he wasn't moving a lot on his PCL yet. And between one session and the next session, he came in and he was smiling and he looked very different. And what he told me had happened was he was listening to his tape and he heard himself saying that he was a monster. And all of a sudden, something, he said, something just clicked in my head that that was wrong. That I, by doing this, I had saved my the people in my convoy. I had done this. And he also said in that same session when he came in that every time he told the story, he would see the image of his child when he sh and he saw his, the image of his child when he shot the child on that day. And he had never put that into the memory that he told us. And so he said, I realized that I needed to tell you that. And that as he did that, his PTSD for like it just went all the way down. And he's so amazing. He had gotten a divorce, hadn't had any contact with his kids in years, and he started like just then that he actually reunited with his wife and they got remarried and he had contact with his kids again, and it's just what super amazing example of how getting good treatment and remitting from PTSD can really bring someone's life back. That's super. That's the only patient I know of who's been divorced because of their PTSD who ended up getting
Get remarried.
remarried. Remarry, yeah.
That's an incredible story because I have found in my practice that a lot of times patients just get progressively better and it's, kind of a gradual process. But there are these some patients, it's like this light switch. It turns like there's this one thing that needed to be addressed and we couldn't figure out what it was. And then all of a sudden it got addressed and it's like the light switch flips. And that's amazing every time I hear it.
His secret hiding that he saw his child's face, I think was the key. That was the piece that was missing. That once he let that out, it was just done.
I'll say too, like I've had people ask me like, why do you do trauma work? What's so interesting about it? It seems like it would just be like this constant grind of darkness day after day. And it's stories like that that's really the answer, right? It's not, yes, sitting with somebody in their darkness is very moving. And seeing somebody regain their life and retake the ground that they had lost to PTSD is so rewarding. And to be able to be there in that journey is just fantastic.
Being able to be the safe space, that they can share those stories, those memories.
Well, so speaking of safe space, our theme this season, this is season six, and so our theme this season is Who's Got Your Six? The idea being that, especially I think in trauma treatment, doing trauma work, but in any of the work that we do, it can be tough work sometimes, and self-care and is important, and having support from others is really the only way to do this effectively. And so we want to normalize that it's not just okay, it's important to have support. And so we've been asking all of our expert guests, could you tell us a bit of a story about somebody who has your six? And it doesn't have to be immediate, it could be in the past. The only rule that we've been having is like, no, don't name names, because like at the Academy Awards, if you miss somebody, then everybody feels like left out or something. So you don't have to name a name, but tell us somebody who's had your six in your career. It could be personal or professional.
Let's see. There are a lot. I've had lots of good. I have a rule in my career that I only work with people who I like to work with.
I love that rule.
That's a great rule. I
haven't always been 100% successful at that, but I really strive to have most of the people I work with be people I enjoy. So let's see who's so I think a good example of someone who's got your six in this context of working with trauma, I would say, are my Emory Healthcare Veterans Program. We have events that any of our team can kind of bring in for mental health help. And one recently that really came at a time when I needed something to pay attention to that wasn't work. Was the Taji 100 challenge for February. This is really recently. So this is a fundraiser for veteran mental health stuff. But basically, it's running 100 miles in February. And
Wow.
you like go on, you register, and it's all over the world. People are running this Taji 100. It started with someone who did that in, I think it was Afghanistan, is where Taji is. Anyway, so the member of our team who put that together, as well as members who put together other things like that, it really came at a time that was super helpful for me. So I ran my 100. I finished it
Wow.
on February 20th. I got my
Whoa,
100
you're a rock
miles.
star. My gosh. Wow.
I was super excited. It was one of those things where I was having a tough day, and then I looked at my schedule, the little thing that was showing how far I got, and I was like, oh, I'm 8 miles from the end of the 100, so I'm gonna go home and run 8 miles.
Oh my gosh.
And I did it.
That is
So
so
anyway.
cool.
Oh, that really puts it in context. I was really excited last night that I ran 3 miles. I'm
That's
very
great.
short of my
That's great.
100.
That's great. Yeah.
Love it. That's a great example, though. Our support can come in all different places
Yeah.
and formats. Well, Sheila, we like to wrap up our episodes by talking about what we call actionable intel, which is what can our listeners take away from our discussion to actually put what we've talked about into practice. So I wonder if you have suggestions for how any of our listeners who are interested in anything that you've talked about today can kind of move forward, and any resources that you mentioned we'll share in our show notes, and we'll make sure people have access to them.
Yeah, so one actionable intel is that I would love for people to follow through on today is just keeping in mind that emotions aren't dangerous, and helping yourself, those around you, talking to people about approaching emotions, and how to approach emotions, and being present with people when they're approaching their emotions, so that you can, let them know it's not a bad thing if you're feeling sad or angry, and all of that. So that's one piece that I would really hope that people would follow through on, just kind of sending out that general message to the universe of emotions are good, or are not good or bad. Emotions are just there, and we can handle them. The other piece of actionable intel that I would really want to put forward is that brief treatment models are available, and you can get training in those models. You can reach out to me or my team to get training in prolonged exposure for primary, or sorry, processing emotions for primary care. We've got teams that do civilian as well as VA training for that. But that actionable intel is brief treatments can work. So finding more ways that we can make entry doors for people with PTSD to effective treatment options.
I love that. We'll include information about how to contact Sheila's team to get that training in the show notes too.
Absolutely.
I'd say one perhaps, and not necessarily trying to hawk books or anything because we don't get any kickbacks, but check out Making Meaning of Difficult Experiences, the workbook there. We'll put notes in the show notes too about how to access that book.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And our manuals, of course, for PE are always out there
Of course, yeah.
as well.
Thank you so much. I this has been such a fantastic discussion. I love this the just the overall theme of so many
Yeah.
doors, so many ways into care, into therapy, and thinking about how do we break down barriers so that more people can benefit from these great treatments and interventions. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so
Yeah.
much for having me. I really enjoyed just talking about PTSD and good treatment and how we can help more people.
And I'm leaving the discussion feeling way more optimistic, especially as,
Same.
accessibility and hurdles and obstacles have been on my mind a lot lately. So this discussion has been fantastic in making me feel more optimistic and hopeful about what we can offer to folks. Yay!
Yay.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the listener questions and comments that are coming in.
Send us
Remember,
more.
we want to hear from you. We will include contact information on our socials and in our show notes, as always, and we hope to hear from you soon. In the meantime, stay curious.
And mind your ABPs.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Remember, we love hearing from our listeners, so leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send us an email. Both can be found in our show notes. Our theme music is Failed Attempts by Nitro, and our administrative assistant is Bree Mercer.
Thanks for listening to Practical for Your Practice.
If you like what you're hearing, please feel free to follow us, rate this episode, and share it with others.
Until next time.